Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. This is the 8th lecture of our series titled Trying to Understand Religion in the Contemporary World. The reason we have chosen this topic is basically the lack of clear understanding which even those who are pursuing religion seriously are having when it comes to understanding the soul and as a result, the role of mankind on earth. Fundamentally, these are crucial questions even before we get into the idea of God. Because the idea of God comes to us as a result of reflection of ourselves and what is the purpose behind us coming here in this world and trying to give meaning to our actions. And when trying to give meaning to our actions, trying to frame a policy of determining those which are supposed to be beneficial individually as well as socially, considering that we are social animals, gregarious by nature, and therefore these questions start the basic discussion about religion as well as philosophy. What the prophets have done, have started off at this point and taken the discussion forward by bringing in ideas which explain our rational movement towards solving these issues, which is done by philosophy, and enhancing our ability to think and ponder through interventions which they make as a result of revelation in the debate. So what actually happens here is there is a double current flowing, one of the intellect and the other of the wahi. So the aql and the revelation work together in enhancing each other. Aql takes us towards understanding prophethood, then accepting the prophet and then prophets, and then moving forward to accepting their books. This can be considered a proper rational activity. That is, thinking about our role, moving to understand our role, getting feedbacks from the prophet, moving towards understanding Godhood through the intellect as well as the prophets, and then start taking the laws on the basis of the revelation which has been given. All this forms part of the human effort and intellect. We tried during the 7 lectures to get the Quranic inputs and see how they have enhanced and moved humanity into a different domain altogether by proposing the idea of the physical creation, bringing it forward, and then speaking of the soul being given to the human being, and then making him a different creation, a different creature altogether, and then using this framework to put the onus and responsibility on mankind to run their societies on the principles of justice. As I already mentioned, the 25th verse of Surah Al-Hadid is very clear, categorical about this. We have sent our apostles with clear proofs and with the book and with the balance, that is a system, so that mankind may uphold justice. So the principle of justice in society becomes a cardinal principle of religion at the other end of the delivery system. Your input is your intellectual and revelational input, and the output is delivering justice at the level of the society. So we don't have a theoretical debate, as philosophers would like to have, about God and Godhead, and would like to link it up very much to the other aspect. That is the role of social justice. Religion is unequivocal here, very clear about it. This is attached to this. It's part and parcel of the same program. If there is acceptance of God, acceptance of the proofs, acceptance of the book through the prophets, and then it should follow by the system which they are introducing, the mizan, and then moving forward using the mizan to uphold justice. It doesn't happen this way. Means there is a kind of a disease which is operating in us, in not being able to digest our rational output and the revolutionary output in the form of social justice. That would again go back to our understanding of the input. So what we do, generally this is the process we follow in any inquiry, even in the physical world. We look at the output, see the defect there, go back to the source, what is happening. Whether we have taken the proper raw materials, whether we have got the kind of purity levels which are required, is the reaction taking place at the right temperature and pressure and for the right time, and all that is then checked to get the thing correct. So when we move forward in religious inquiry, we would, if we know that social justice is not happening in our times, go back and take a review from the very beginning. In that review, during the last 7 lectures, one critical aspect which we talked about, there will be some repetition just to bring back the importance of what we are doing. I think somehow this kind of importance needs to be made the central point of our discussion here. When God says, "Ma khalaqtul jinna wal insa illa liya'budun," I've not created the jinn and the humans except that they worship me. That is the sole role of their creation, is worship of God. It emphatically means that the physical function which we perform with our bodies, the food we take in, the families we run, are not part of the soul's function. The soul's function, which has made us a different being altogether, again using the words of the Quran, is something much, 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 much higher than what we think we are doing. So what actually happens is, the role of the soul has got diminished in religions, all religions, including Islam. And as a result of that, we are making our religion follow the path which is best suited for our bodies in this world. So when religion becomes an addendum, something additional for making our lives in this world more palatable to our conscience, we have taken the wrong route to religion. The religion which is actually a design for the soul to accept and create a kind of immortality which it contains in this world, and feel that immortality in this world and act on the basis of that immortality, is lost to us. This is something very new which I am putting forward. The soul is immortal. It's in this world where the body is mortal. The body is being given significance to the point that religion is being adapted for the body to keep it safe by keeping some things away in the form of haram, using it for our good of the world, not looking it from the perspective of the soul as an immortal entity, and then using religion for contemporaneous, daily, mundane work. So the difference between a religious person and an irreligious person is only one of some kind of morals. He is away from them, and the person who is irreligious is someone who is not in that proper frame of puritanical behavior. Does religion only differentiate us in the ethical format? Otherwise, are we the same? When it accepts to accepting whatever evil is happening in this world, are we accepting it just like any other person who is religious accepting it? And if we are, why are we? The big question is, our souls and their souls are roughly in the same domain. Their irreligion is for the world and our religion is for this world. This is what we actually need to review. Is our religion for this world alone, or it has ramifications much beyond it being for this world? We move forward on this basis towards understanding the fact that the soul was created first, and we spoke about it, saying that Aql is the first creation and it has what we call freedom to act. Considering that only God was there when it was created, the question of freedom doesn't make a lot of sense, because there is hardly anything to be free about except for accepting the command of God, and which it does. When God says to come forward, it comes forward. God says go back, it goes back. Or he goes back. Or he slash he's go, she goes back. So the question is now, God also says at that time, I have created nothing better than thee, and I will examine you, test you, and reward you, and retribution would also come to you. And I'll perfect you in those who I love. Now my question here, which comes to the today's discussion, is like this. When God says that this Aql is a work in progress, is the best thing he has created, and it is going to get perfected, and would be perfected in those he loves. So many questions come to us. If it is to be perfected, it will not be perfected in the state which it has been created. So there has to be another step forward where it can be tested in the proper way, where the freedom starts making sense. So the greatest thing God can create is something which has freedom. Anything which doesn't have freedom cannot be the best of creation. Secondly, this is today's topic. Secondly, if he just replicated himself, God is there, he is free, he has created a replica of himself. What does that mean? It means God has created redundancy. He is all powerful. He is not exhausted by what he creates. And how he maintains it also doesn't lead to his getting exhausted. وَلَا يَعُودُهُ حِفْزُهُمَا وَهُوَ الْعَلِيُّ الْعَظِيمُ. The fag end of the Ayatul Kursi. Protecting, maintaining the heavens and the earth doesn't exhaust him. That is what the fag end part of Ayatul Kursi is saying. So he's all powerful. He's not exhausted. He doesn't sleep. He doesn't have any of those bodily functions of drowsing. When this be the case, he creates something exactly like him. So they are now two with equal freedom, equal power, both omniscient, both omnipotent. What does it happen in the world? they'll have to be two universes, which they are not. That's what God says. There'll be one universe. And if there are more than one God, there'll be havoc. Quran verse says that. If there were two gods in this world, the world would be destroyed. Two forces acting with equal will and equal freedom. So creating something exactly like him doesn't make sense at all. It's redundancy and the system doesn't move forward. One would have to retire and give way to the other. So God has to restrict his power. What is restricted either in the domain of action or in the domain of power would be called limited. Though he has unlimited power, he has limited it in action to 50% and given the 50% to the other. Restriction of God's power, again, doesn't make sense unless it's for a purpose. Since that he's not exhausted by it, so restricting his power for the sake of restricting power doesn't have any sense. So that makes us understand his sense of logic, which looks obviously flawed. And as God says, there is no flaw in him, no limitation in him. Subhanahu wa ta'ala, amma yasifun. He's pure, blemishless, sanctified, and exalted compared to what they attribute to him. So this gives us a clear picture. Creation of another godlike entity with similar powers would not be possible except for redundancy and the limit, or in a way limiting his own powers for no reason at all. Had he become tired? Yes, he should have. So you come down to the next thing. As you keep evaluating, you will see that there is nothing possible better than us to be created. And what the riwayat say from Usulul Kafi hit the nail on the head. The Imams, through their intuitive knowledge, give us what the Quran gives in a general pattern without giving a clear expression of what the ruh is. The quality of the ruh, when questioned by the followers of the Prophet, yas'alunaka anir ruh, the Quran says. They ask you, O Prophet, about the ruh, the soul. Say that it's a command of God and the knowledge given to you about it is limited. The reason for the limitation of the knowledge and why the Quran doesn't mention it at that point is the inability to understand the intricacies of the soul by the laity, by the ordinary people. And therefore the verse of the Quran question those who know. If you do not know, fasalul ahlu zikr in kuntum la talamun. So the question of ahlu zikr also comes. Those who are already mindful. Ahlul Zikr would be people who are mindful of the reality. Question them. So who is mindful of the reality? The Prophet and the Imams. So there is a dependency for developing the system to a higher level to follow the book, the Quran, and then the Ahlul Bayt. It was not for no reason that the Quran and the Ahlul Bayt were brought together as those who would be the main source of guidance after the Prophet. Saqal means in Arabic a tiffin. So what is being given is food for the soul after the prophet is gone. Saqalain means two tiffins, two food boxes. Saqal is what you carry when you go on travel in the form of food. So you have a soul which needs to be continuously given the food for it to sustain itself. Who's going to give it? The bodily food is available to everybody, to animals, to humankind, even to plants in their own way. But what is not available is the guidance to the soul. And this guidance is available to us through the book and the prophet, when the prophet is going, through the imams. So this comes like that. So the aql mentioned by in the ahadith, in the traditions from the imams, and they have narrated it from the holy prophet, is very, very obvious that what has been created, if you evaluate it logically, you will end at yourself. Now the trouble starts. I start thinking about everything. What is the greatest thing in the world? I want to know. And the funny part is, I also come back to the same thing, and the hadith takes me to the same point. And the Quran also takes me to the same point through the words of Tabarakallahu Ahsanul Khaliqeen. So my aql, which has been given to me, starts feeling like that. Because I feel it. I get it through the hadith and I get it through the Quran. But the big question is, the words don't make a sense unless they are properly assimilated. Anybody can make sense of what is being mentioned. The aql mentioned in the hadith, Nafaqtu fihi min ruhi. Then we created him as another being after the formation of the complete baby in the womb. But our level of appreciation needs to be enhanced. We need to realize this, that we are the crown of creation. Realize it, that we are, very importantly, immortal. Immortal. Our soul, which is what we are, has been given a body fit for it, which the Quran says, Inna khalaqnal insana fi ahsanit taqween. We have designed mankind in the best form. We are upright compared to all things which have gone ahead of us, including the Neanderthals or others which precede us. Among the hominids, we are a different thing altogether. We are infinitely superior to all we have access to in this world, and to the extent we have been able to navigate the universe. This makes us what we are. This sense of immortality makes us use the world as an opportunity for making the soul capable of it being accepted by God at the time of death, and raised from that point, from the time of Barzakh till the time of Qiyamah in a particular manner, and from there onwards, after the Qiyamah, two times ever after. This needs to be just not understood, it needs to be realized. When I look at my soul, I should be able to say, this is what I carry. And only when I am able to do that, will I be able to really appreciate this world as the best place for the soul, not the best place for the body. The biggest problem is we are considering this place to be the best place for the body, going for bodily comfort, and considering that if we are having it, God has been kind to us. So the rich, the wealthy, those who are enjoying life in ways so different than us, still hold a place in our mind. The mutrifeen, as the Quran would say, those who are endowed with a lot of possessions and wealth. The Firauns and the Nimruds. Or those of today. Start looking at something great. But we keep ourselves happy and say, well, God has not given us all that. But considering that He has given us something. And when we look at the poor people who have nothing, we still are happy that He is good. He is a Rahman. He is Rahim. And what a great God is He. And we need to worship and pray Him. For what? For what He has given in the world. He says, what I have given in your world is for testing you. So why are you priding over it? Why are you thinking you are a great person who has been endowed with something so very great, or if something less, good enough for you to be happy about? Bal razitum bil hayati dunya, says the Quran. And you were satisfied with the life of this world. You were satisfied with the life of this world. Though the hereafter is better and long lasting. وَالْآخَرَةُ خَيْرٌ وَأَبْقَى. This is what we are now in and which we need to really think and ponder about. Are we for this world or is this world for us? Is the soul made for the body or the body made for the soul? The body is not something which can be given the soul. The soul is something which would be given the body. So something started off as the first of creation when there was no time. There was no universe. There was nothing except God and this creation. The akhl, the intellect. And then we have a process. Now this akhl needs to be given a body. How long will it take? It takes about 13.8 billion years to get the body ready for the soul. Strange. We have a very established principle among scientists that nature takes the shortest way. What can be accomplished by two steps? The nature will not take three steps. The nature takes the shortest route. That means if there is one additional step being added, that means that step is necessary, therefore it is there. Otherwise, that step wouldn't have been there. How long did it take for matter from that infinitesimal point to reach the kind of expanse it has? And then at the fag end we come out. And then at that point God gives us the soul. And at that point we feel, and as we mentioned earlier, that the angels also want it. And Iblis also wants it. They understood the importance of it better than we understand. Though the angels understood and prostrated, and Iblis didn't. And got thrown away. This is the position that we are today as human beings. The enormity of our situation is not occurring to us as it should. The immortality of our soul is not occurring to us as it should. If we want to move forward on the path of religion, this has to be the driving force. This world is a limited period for us to use the physical world through the process of being tested as the best opportunity to enhance the power of the soul. And once that power of the soul is enhanced. Had aflaha man zakkaha is what the Quran says. After so many oaths, ashamsa wa zuhaha, and onwards and onwards and onwards, after so many oaths, God says, he who has been able to purify it, not allowed the darkness of matter settle on it, this is the successful one. And he who has buried it in matter, dasta means to bury, he has destroyed himself. Adhaba man dasta, who has dirtied himself with material and matter. We have it in Surah Ala also. This is Surah Shams, that is Surah Ala. قَدْ أَفْلَحَ مَنْ تَزَكَّى وَذَكَرَ اسْمَ رَبِّهِ فَصَلَّى. And who purifies his soul and remembers God and calls out to him in prayer. Then the verse moves forward. بَلْ تُسِرُونَ الْحَيَاةَ الدُّنْيَا وَالْآخَرَةُ خَيْرٌ وَأَبْقَى. But they started preferring the life of this world, choosing it for the hereafter, though the hereafter is better, or the best, higher would be meaning best, and obviously long lasting. And this has been mentioned in the books of Moses and Abraham. Al-akhiratu khayrun wa abqa. Inna haza fi suhuf al-ula. This is in the suhuf of the earlier prophets. Suhuf Ibrahim wa Musa. This is the pristine truth. The soul is the center. The soul is being asked. The soul is being given information. And the soul plays according to the rules of God or doesn't play according to the rules of God. The imams had only one function to perform. Purify themselves and take from God and give it to the people who are capable of assimilating it and accepting it. No compulsion. There is no possibility of compulsion in religion. When God says there is no compulsion in religion, it just doesn't mean that you shouldn't compel people to follow a religion. No, this is a small part of what it could mean. This means there cannot be compulsion in religion. The soul is free. The soul is free. You can't compel it. That's the design of it. The very purpose of the soul being the greatest thing is that. Any other thing it would have apart from freedom and then following the creation of God from the beginning till the body was ready for accepting the soul, which I have mentioned earlier also. The soul, the nafs, before it, the spirit, the ruh, and before it, the aql. All are part of a same single system. It could be viewed as a wave, if not as a particle. This is something very, very important for us to remember, think, ponder. And once this aql was there with God, it saw everything happening in front of it. So therefore, this question of God taking a covenant, Alastu bi rabbikum qalu bala, am I not your Rabb? They all said, yes, yes. Shahidna, we bear witness against the words of the Quran. People ask, we don't know. You don't know, basically, you don't know your soul. The day we realize our soul, Halu Bala would be resonating in it, and our Shahidna, our Shahadat would be resonating in it. How do we get to it? We get to it through the process of thinking, and our process of thinking leading us to the existence of God. And through the further persevering on the same path, leading us to the necessity of prophethood, and then finding the prophets, taking guidance from them, and using both the intellect as well as the knowledge given by the prophets. As the Quran says about those who have gone astray, neither did they think nor did they listen. They didn't know anything. Had they thought, they would have gone to a certain level, which would have been in consonance with what the prophet said. And the reason the prophets got prophethood was their ability to reach that point where their intellect took them from their natural ability to feel their soul, and from there God held them and took them forward. Had they not that ability, God wouldn't have given them prophethood. Therefore the Quran says, we know better to whom to give prophethood. Others wanted it in this world. Somebody strong and powerful in Mecca, somebody strong and powerful in Taif. They said, why this orphan of Abdullah? But God knows better. He says, I know better where to put my prophethood. Similarly, imamat. Who to make the imam? When we go more seriously into the discussions on prophethood and imamat, we can go into greater detail. But you have to understand that the souls are mature enough because they follow the path of creation completely. Some of us can more easily go into that domain. Some of us need to make an effort. But those who are created at a level where these things are more accessible to them are made for a higher level, and those for whom it is less possible are made at the lower level. So even in the prophets, as the Quran says, hum darajat, they are at different levels. So we don't have a common level of prophethood also. There are prophets even for small villages, there are prophets for small number of people, and there are prophets at the level of the whole world, depending on where they came. And the final prophet, obviously, would be for the Alameen. Inna arsalnaka rahmatan lil Alameen. For all the worlds, whatever kind they are. So the question of us sharing the same soul as the prophet, as I mentioned earlier, that intellect is also called as Noor-e Muhammad. Had it not been for that Noor, that which has the intellect, and which we are part of, the whole creation would become meaningless. There is no sense in this world, except for somebody coming in, enjoying himself to whatever extent he or she can, and just going out. Some of them, without any sense of divine or holiness, some with some false sense of accepting the divine, and some false sense of holiness, and nothing else. No real purpose. There could be people who start feeling something great about this creation, but since there is none of it, the world doesn't make a sense. So the world needs to start from a point of view of intelligence, intellect, move forward in the physical form. The intellect joins the physical and controls the physical, and that is what the amanat is. The freedom to act in the world, change the physical matter into a higher reality and a higher social construct. Our society should be a higher social construct, and that cannot happen except with the accepting of God and accepting the fact that we are the servants of God in this world, His khulafa, His viceroys, His vicegerents. This is what is going to make things. And once the centrality of the soul becomes clear, our body becomes more important to us, because there is no other way for the soul to work except through the body. So the body doesn't become important for itself. This is also a fundamental importance. This is also a fundamental importance. The body is meaningless without the soul. The human body is completely meaningless. Maybe the body of a cow or a buffalo have meaning and they have a lot of meaning to us. They give us milk. Other animals also may be having some meaning to us. But we wouldn't be having any meaning in this physical sense. So instead of becoming the best, we will end up becoming the worst. And that's what is happening. Those who are considering their body to be the greatest thing that they have are the worst of creation. And those who are thinking in the opposite direction, they are the Khairul Bariya, the best of creation. Have we the strength, the fortitude to prioritize ourselves as souls who have been given a body for a limited period of time to see to it? There are verses and verses of the Quran. I'm just not quoting it because there are so many. There is no significance of the body except what it is from the point of view of the soul. And it becomes very, very important to the soul to be used the way God wants it to be used. And in doing that, we would be functioning as normal animals, feeding ourselves, feeding our families. There is no doubt about it. We, having a body, need to be animals to see to it that our body is fed, clothed, and has a place to keep itself safe. This is the animal function. Running a family is an animal function. I have already spoken about it. I have just made this discussion a bit wider and placed it in a bigger format by putting a different light which the Quran puts here and what is visible to us. And worship is the process through which the soul starts maturing and then starts feeling itself as an independent identity apart from the body. It feels that it's on a driver's seat and dictating the body, which includes the mind. So the mind takes in what is necessary, doesn't accept what is not necessary. The same way as we feed our bodies. If something is not good for us to eat, we put it aside. The mind is also something like that. If we want to choose what the mind has to take in, we need to know what the mind needs. And that depends on what the soul needs and how the soul wants the mind to work. So, as the Quran says, when they pass beside things which are indecent, they do so with a nobility of a kind which makes them safe from getting impacted by that indecency. This is what we all are. This is what we will really be if we use prayer, worship and the guidance from the Quran and the Ahl-e Bayt after the Prophet to take us on to the path of soulfulness and bring the body under the control of the soul. The role of intuition, which I spoke of last time, and this was the topic here also, the intuition part is totally dependent on our being able to see our journey from when we were created in the form of the Aql, the spirit, the soul. Intellect, spirit, soul. If we can trace this journey back to the intellect, we would be able to see things which we are incapable of seeing from our eyes, which are capable of seeing physical realities. Aided with the microscope and telescope, we'll be seeing more. Through the microscope in more detail, through the telescope at further distances. But the question of intuition still remains. Human beings have things in them which are far beyond what the material teaches them. It is their intuition. Knowledge has grown. So many people went into the bath. But Archimedes gets an intuition. He starts shouting, Eureka, Eureka. Things happen in the same manner. Your intuition is there. To what extent you can enhance it is important. What the prophet did and why the scientific revolution and the cultural revolution and the political revolution took place after the prophet, despite so many hurdles, still the Islamic civilization grew and controlled the world for 1,000 years. The reason was plain. It ignited the intuitive part of the human being. Our intuitive part got ignited. Once that got ignited, the physical became much more simple to comprehend than what it was for the earlier generation. So how could a people who didn't know how to read and write turn out and produce things and the faith which came to them, those who couldn't read and write, Ummiyin as the Quran says, those who couldn't read and write, the faith came to them. And then it moved forward to a different level. They were able to absorb knowledge like a sponge from all sides. On what basis? Physical? Impossible. There was no great change among the Arabs after the Prophet came. What was changed was there? The most important thing, their soul. And that impacted the other cultures. And Islam got people from all sides who started supporting the system. This is the reality of our intuition. We all have it. We can raise it to the levels the Imams taught us to be raised by raising it themselves in this world. If all the Imams got was not through an effort, they are the least important examples for us. Those who you cannot follow are not examples. And for following, they have to show you the path which you follow by looking at them. So when the Quran says, لَخَدْ كَانَ لَكُمْ فِي رَسُولِ اللَّهِ أُسْوَةٌ حَسَنٌ, you have a best exemplar in the Prophet. And the same holds for the Imams. Or when Imam Hussein says, لَكُمْ فِي يَا أُسْوَةٌ, you have the best example in me on his way to Karbala. It means the same. What we have done, we started off from a zero when we came out of the wombs of our mother. And move by utilizing what God has given us through the knowledge from our parents and the rational principle which is there in all of us, and used it to move to a level of that kind. If they knew everything from the very beginning, how do I, who doesn't know anything according to the Quran, أَخْرَجَكُمْ مِنْ بُطُونِ أُمَّهَاتِكُمْ لَا تَعْلَمُونَ شَيْهَا, and he brought you out from the wombs of your mothers in a state where you knew nothing. Where you knew nothing. So knowing nothing and then moving forward. The Prophet or the Imams or anybody, once they come into this world, come as human beings. Anna Basharun Mislukum, says the Quran. O Prophet, tell them, accept the fact that I get revelations. We need to understand. When we follow them, we need to follow the path which they have taken to develop that intuitiveness. And that happened as a result of piety. There is another verse in the Quran which really establishes what I am saying. Allaysa lil insani illa ma sa'a. Nothing belongs to man for which he did not labor. So anything which you have of intuition is going to come through labor. But the question is, if only having faith in God could be a source of intuitiveness, there will be no competition at all. people who are not accepting God would have no intuition. There wouldn't be any great growth. What we see in world history is that if the people who are having faith and support of the Quran and the Ahle Bayt, they don't use them. So the normal speed at which the society has to grow will grow. And those human beings who are making a real hard effort would get intuitions. So we have intuitions to those who don't believe in God, those who believe in God, those who do not seriously believe in God. That process of intuition to a limited extent is open. They will not be able to create a world, but they will be able to create knowledge and have an impact. And as a result of which, we who are having faith, and as God says, antumul alauna in kuntum mu'minin, you will have ascendancy if you are mu'minin. That being mu'minin without the requisite conditions leads us to have our hands below the hands of other people, not above them. So there is a small window available to everybody to use that kind of intuition without accepting God. But they will create science, technology, but never will that lead to adalat. Never will that lead to adalat. So with that science, with that technology, zulm will become more and more. But if it comes through the mu'minin in the real sense, the technology and the science would actually move at a higher pace and then would be able to impact on adalat as well, on maintaining, upholding justice as well, because the process is one. Accepting God's existence through bayyinat, accepting the revelation through the book, then accepting the mizan, the system, and then following it up with upholding justice according to the 25th verse of Suratul Hadid. Break it, that process would be available. Kullan numiddu haulai wa haulai min atai rabbik. Those who want the akhirat and those who don't want the akhirat and want the dunya, we will aid both of them. And in our aid and support, there is no restriction, says the Quran. So if you slumber, the world, the history of the world, the way the world moves forward will be there. But it will go through a process of injustice after injustice. And you also will become part and parcel of the same process. We speak of Islamic rule. The Islamic rule had a lot of good things, but the question of whether it was doing zulm or not is very, very visible. Though the zulm was less, the zulm was there. And we know during the time of the Imam, what kind of zulm happened. But the Imam still pursued on the path of intuition and knowledge, brought it forward, and the greatest impact that happened to Islam was from them, though they were not politically in control. We need to remember, we don't need to be in political control to be producers of knowledge. If we enhance our intuition on one hand and create institutions to use the knowledge available to us today by bringing both together. Institutions for getting the available knowledge to us, the available technologies to us, and then using intuition to move to a level of higher experiences and higher levels of knowledge. The stage is set. If we want, imma shakirun wa imma kafura. Either be grateful to what you have and understand it, or be ungrateful. The choice is printed on the human soul, the human spirit, the human intellect, the first creation of Almighty Allah. May God help us all in feeling the soul which He gave us. feeling the importance and the great, great, great mercy He has had on us by giving us the soul, through which we maintain our identity. And more, for making it immortal. And for more, for making it see the creation from the beginning of creation to this time. Let us live up to it. And we pray Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala give all of us the strength to pursue what You created us to pursue. Not what we, as in a state of forgetfulness, prioritize and pursue. The life of this world. Nothing worth pursuing for the soul of the universe. You can call your soul the soul of the universe. Because had it not been for your soul, this universe wouldn't have been there. As is established that it had it not been for the soul of the Prophet, the universe wouldn't have been there. It comes back to us as well. Because that would just limit it to the period of the Prophet. So why is the world there now? And why was the world there before? So it becomes very simple. We are part of the same journey. The Prophet is the best example. The Imams and the Quran lead onto the same path which the Prophet asked us, through what God asked him to proclaim. And then we are today here, fully loaded with whatever we want. We are a fully loaded system for doing great things, not individually, together. We can't do it individually. Individual is not what the society is made up of. And the individual passes away. So it's foolish to have a continuous process where the most important thing should be the individual. No. The society remains. The individuals keep coming and going. Let us also be among those who leave behind a better people than what we ourselves are. Leave behind better progeny than what we ourselves are. Not lesser progeny than what we ourselves are. Wa akhiru da'wana an alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.
Thank you very much. Jazakallah. Thank you very much, Mujahid, for an excellent talk, particularly about the immortality of the soul, which I think we are all aware of, but it needs to be reminded, and how worship can keep you away from indecency and committing sins. And this whole role of intellect and role of intuition. One question I had in terms of the role of intuition, would you say what's described by somebody as religious experience or witnessing of the heart? You know, there's that Imam Ali's saying that he doesn't worship somebody that he doesn't see. Somebody asked him, have you seen your Lord? And he said, I do not worship an entity that I do not see. But then he said, I don't see him through my eyes, but I see him through my heart, through my qalb. So, is that related to intuition, would you say, or not?
As we have our bodies, and we are sure we are walking on something solid. And if the ground under our feet is not very stable, we don't feel very comfortable walking. Right? If it's something like a wet floor or something which is on a mattress kind of a thing, where our feet don't find the proper grip. So we do have something, a firmament for our body, in which, and in that condition, it feels comfortable. While sleeping also, while sitting also, we have the same issue. There is something beyond that comfort level goes. Except for people who can easily float on water without moving their hands and feet, others would find it very difficult to just keep floating. They'll have to learn that. So they will be uncomfortable on that, to sleep on water. They won't be able to do. So we know that there is a physical kind of a comfort level. Come to the soul. Come to the soul. Most of us don't realize it, basically because we think we are a body. And that is what is, what God says is, they are like cattle or even worse. Where you are understanding your soul is not there at all. Otherwise God, if there was even an iota of understanding of the soul, wouldn't have said they are like cattle or even worse. The Quran says that. The reason is, we can get into the state where we are totally in oblivion of our soul. Totally, totally. That is the most difficult thing. Okay, why is it so? Why is it so? The reason is, any higher entity will not be known by a lesser entity. When we say we understand God, we do it basically because He said, I have blown my spirit into him. Nafakhtu fihi min ruhi. That is the closeness of the spirit with God. Therefore, it's capable of understanding God. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been capable. It has to have a level of appreciation where it is in direct contact with the reality which it is saying it is accepting. So the ruh was in direct contact with the reality, and it accepted it. Brought into the condition of the nafs with the body, though it came with the conviction and witnessing the fact that Alastu bi rabbikum qalu bala, in this world it can be totally obliterated by the physical forces. In the functional aspect. Obliterated in the functional aspect. So you have a ruh, functionally is a zero. Functionally it's a zero. Now you want the body to make you understand the soul. You want the body to make you understand the soul. I didn't get into the discussion on atheism because it is just prolonged. This was the biggest problem they have. And I think in the next one, I'll be just starting with it and ending with this. How atheists look at the world and why they can't find God. They start with the physical and end at the physical. Though, in the inquiry of the physical, had they used their soul and felt that they are using their soul, they wouldn't have come to those conclusions. I'll give examples of it in my next lecture, inshallah. Examples of it. Looking at the world with physical eyes and asking it to yield God is impossible. Because the tools you are applying for knowing God cannot cross that Rubicon. And you have to accept the world as it is. I'll give examples of it and how it has happened. In greater detail, will this become clear? So what actually happens is, when Mala says, I don't worship a God I have not seen, and obviously says, I see it through the eye of the heart, it means that he is looking at the world from the point of view of the soul. If somebody looks at the world from the point of view of the soul, God is the first entity he comes across. But how to do it? You have to reduce your physical being to a zero. If you reduce your physical being to a zero, there is a nothing but God there. Because there will be no physical aspect to your ruh. Your physical being has been reduced to a zero. And now that the physical being has been reduced to a zero, the only entity you will be seeing is that entity which the akhl saw in the first point of creation, and that was God. Maula was speaking about that point, that if we are looking at this world through the eyes of the soul. That's what he meant when he said through the heart. The eyes of the soul. God is the only entity you come across. And then everything comes from God. Everything comes from God. This body, this mind, the thought processes, the breath, the flowing of the blood in the arteries and veins, the beating of the heart, the senses which we all have, the food which we have in front of us, which we eat and enjoy. You need to change the perspective. Instead of keeping your back to the mirror, you have to turn yourself towards the mirror. And God, as is perceived by these personalities, is something which is like the real image, like the real image, and the creation is the shadow. So if he is the real and the creation becomes the shadow, it is obvious the real is worshipped and the shadow is used. The real is worshipped. I'm just giving a kind of example. It's not very literal, but real is he. Allahu nuru samawati wal ard. That's what the Quran says. He's the light of the universe. So when he is the light of the universe, he is the light, and whatever is there in the universe is a reflection of his light, a shadow in our parlance, from the physical sense. So we need to properly appreciate this fact that it is in us to reduce ourselves from what we feel ourselves to be physically to a point where we have nothing left in us, at least from the gaze which we have. And that kind of withdrawal comes in the state of Salat. Why is Salat called the Mirajul Mumin? The ultimate point of ascendancy. Miraj means that. It's an instrument. Miraj, Mihrab, in Arabic, is Isme Ala. That which is used for naming tools. Mihrab in the masjid is the tool, the instrument of war, harb. Miraj is the instrument of ascendancy. So Salat is the instrument of ascendancy. In states of Salat, where you are totally oblivious of the body, your breath also, your eyes are not focused on any kind of thing which is engaging your attention, there you will feel at times there is no one except God. And that soul would accept nothing except God. That is, I think, what we can make of Mawla prayer. What actually he was in, we can't know. But we can know this much, that he was in God, feeling God more palpably, more tangibly than what we feel of the physical realities of things. Because physical senses have a limited impact. My fingers touch this table and I have an understanding of it. I interpret it through my mind. If my sense of touch is gone, I won't be able to even interpret it, because it won't carry to my brain. There, the state of the soul is no interpretation is required, because it's a direct connection. Nafaqto fihi mir ruhi. And they ask you about the soul and say the soul is amr of my Lord. The reason is, amr means there is no intervening thing. Khalq means there is an inter. God says in the Quran, "Wa min ayatihi khalaqakum min turab." And from his signs is that he created you out of the earth. Khalq requires something intermediate. Amr requires nothing intermediate. And where he says the amr and the khalq are my domain, he means both. Things created directly by him and things and ruh is directly created. So once you remove the whole physical aspect, the ruh feels God much more strongly than what we feel the table and surroundings of, because they come and get processed. There is no process there at all.
Thank you.
Getting madder by the minute.
Thank you, Mujahid. Thank you so much. I can see a couple of hands are up. If I could ask Bazar Haid to ask his question, he's got a hand up.
Assalamu alaikum. Question is, like you said, all the prophets, imams, got their knowledge after coming into the world. Yeah. How does it explain that our concept of ilme laduni and even Hazrat Isa, when he was a child, he responded that I'm Abdullah. So how does that correspond with that?
Yeah. This is very simple. What Hazrat Isa had was a miracle which was being performed by God. God can make a stone speak, a tree speak, or anything else to speak. Leave alone a child prophet. So that was the sign of God speaking through him. And that was all. After that, we don't have miracles coming till the point of his ministry, which came roughly around 30 years after that. So this is what we would call a miracle, and in that the action is totally God's. Second, the levels of people we live in this world have different IQs. We are very sure about it, right? We can measure it. People have different IQs. A question was asked of the Imam, why are some people more intelligent than others? In my first or second lecture, I had just hinted towards this. He says, some people get their intelligence at the level of the fetus, initial stage, where they are in the form of zygote. Then there are some whose intelligence grows in the womb. And there are some whose intelligence grows after they come in this, out of the womb, in this world. From the medical point of view, you have interconnections which you speak of. Musa Bhai being a doctor himself. We know parents who are educated, capable, not first generation learners, there is a greater chance of their children carrying a higher IQ level. Though there are exceptions as well. What this hadith says is basically this. That from the point of view of the physical reality, there is a lot of difference between individuals. Those who need to be selected for imam, mat or risalat, are those obviously who are at a much higher level for them to take this responsibility. So the prophet would be having that kind of intellect, strong capability of using the mind, which has a lot of connectivity, much more than ordinary mortals, being a mortal himself. The imams would have the same thing. But the point of starting would be a zero. Had it not been a zero, they don't become exemplars for us. They don't become a hujja over us. By just very one fact that you made them run from a point where we didn't start running from. And God says, Lillahi hujjatul balagha. He has the highest proof with him. Whatever proof he gives wouldn't have been a highest proof. The Quran is self-explanatory. You cannot treat it in a haphazard manner. When it says, Allaysa lil insani illa ma sa, there's nothing for man but what he labors for, puts an effort. It doesn't make sense at all. So if you don't credit all these personalities with an effort of a gigantic kind, we would not be able to give them credit for anything. We just couldn't. Just imagine, Janab-e Isa comes, delivers this verses, Inni Abdullah, Atani al-Kitaba wa Ja'alani Nabiya. وَبَرْنَنْ بِوَالِدَتِكْ And then, he vanishes. He vanishes. He doesn't come back for a ministry 30 years later. What would you speak about this person? Would you give any credit to him? You would say, a baby was born 30 years ago. The ministry has not started, he's just vanished. He's going to come back when God wants him. You don't give him any credit at all. Whatever comes through that process in which the human effort is not involved is not praiseworthy at all. Yes, somebody can be endowed with a higher level or a lesser level depending upon the role which God envisages for him or her. But that is something which helps in the effort, not something which makes a starting point different from where they are. Now you would question, that question was again last time asked, why some prophets, why some imams have to be at a higher level? They were the Bani Israel imams, they were not the level of the imams which the last prophet had. The last prophet was not at the level of the other prophets. It depends upon the situation which we are coming. This question can be asked by an ant, by a elephant, by a dinosaur. Why this me, why this not me? It doesn't make a lot of sense. What you are, if you are able to deliver on that, that is enough. If you are given X capability and you are supposed to deliver after accepting the prophets and the imams and the Quran, according to that X ability, and you have done it, you will be with the prophets and the imams in Qiyamah, in Jannah. But if you were given a much higher capability and you performed at a much lower level, you will be nowhere near them. Maybe you will be in Jannah somewhere. And at times, even worse happens. With a higher intellect, you don't follow them, you fall into a trap of arrogance. That which happened with a lot of people during the time of Prophet and the times of the Imam and even today. Their higher IQ caused them to go astray rather than taking them towards Hidayah. Of Amare Az, Maula says, if he wanted, he could get what he wanted through being on the rightly guided path. This is the same thing towards which Imam Hussain called Umar ibn Sa'd. But they didn't accept it. So a higher intellectual capacity, a higher IQ, at times plays, it's a double-edged sword. You can use it for your own advantage or also a disadvantage. What God wants is, I have given you this option, imma shakirawa, imma kafura. So please, let us allow the imams to be what they are through their effort, not reducing any greatness of theirs, but making them own it. But what actually they have done is they have utilized God at every step of moving towards Him. And their greatness is a reflection of God through them to us. So let us say that all goodness belongs to God and all goodness can be taken by us from God at our own levels. May God enhance our levels. May God give us the strength to live up to what He has created us for. And as I said, give us deliverance from the sins which we are into and towards the right guidance which we can easily get from the Imams and the Quran.
Thank you again, Mujahid. I think we're running out of time. There's two individuals who've got some questions. One is Yasser Rauji, and I think Irshad Mirza has also got one. So if I could ask Yasser to quickly ask his question, if we could keep the answers fairly short, I think we'll then hopefully not overrun the time too much. I know we started a bit late, but so we've got Yasser, if you could like to ask your question, please.
Yes, Salaam Alaikum, Mujahid Bhai.
Salaam Alaikum.
Jabai, what is the nature of arrogance? Is it material or non-material?
Arrogance can be of any kind. Arrogance, for identifying it, I suppose, if you feel something in yourself and in that feeling you don't have God beside you, that is arrogance in itself. That is arrogance. You feel anything good in you and you don't have God beside you to participate in it. Actually, He is the originator of it actually. He is actually the originator. Through the words of the Quran, وَخَلَقَكُمْ وَمَا تَفَلُونَ And He has created you and what you do. So any goodness coming out of us is His creation. He's made the laws in a particular manner that if you stand on that point, you move in that direction. So you do have a choice for moving. But the question is, if the gradient was not there at all, your choice wouldn't have materialized. So whatever good happens actually, it has been materialized through a gradient of which you chose to use. So you use the mercy of God to do a great thing. And when you did that great thing, God vanishes and you stay. That is arrogance. It could be anything. It could be knowledge. It could be wealth. It could be beauty. It could be birth. From the point of view of birth. All this could be arrogance. Wherever you are finding yourself without God, that is arrogance.
But the soul by itself doesn't have arrogance, right?
The soul by itself doesn't have arrogance provided it is not exposed to the material factors. At the point of creation, it didn't, in the form of akhl. But when it became nafs, which I mentioned in the earlier lectures, is the same spirit which becomes the soul when it interacts with the body. And the nafs is a problem. Nafs has its own entity with a physical entity with it. And the physical entity has a period, and the nafs is going to be the nafs till the period of having a physical reality. And when the nafs is moved away in the form that it sees death, so the nafs ceases to exist, it becomes a form of a different kind without a worldly body. The body has been destroyed or taken away. So what actually we need to understand is the coming into the world and being associated with the physical and the cultural impact of society, both work. The cultural impact and the physical hormonal impact, both are causes for our coming down. And we can feel it. There is no doubt about it. When we are having higher levels of testosterone, and God bless us and blessed us that He didn't make our testosterone level 10 times of what they are. 10 times of what they are. If you had made it, we wouldn't have done anything except what people do who are the worst criminals, serial killers, serial rapists. So He has given us and tested us in a normal manner. He has just given us what is required to be tested. Khalaqal insanu zaifa, says the Quran, man has been created weak. But that weak is not the weak we understand. It's the weak which God says. In the physical form, you have your susceptibilities. But I am testing you at a much lesser level. And that is a mercy from me to you. Had that mercy not been with physical things, nothing moving would be seen on the surface of the earth, says the Quran. The Quran says this. Had it not been. And so His mercy is in one form, has limited our hormones to a particular level which we are capable of controlling, which we are capable of controlling through His guidance. So the whole fact is this, that the nafs, because the soul is now with the body, is tested through, and again, society, as I told you, in a society which is materialistic, material wealth, beauty, birth, how close you are to the people who rule, the ministers, the presidents, or maybe some sages, some religious divine, how close you are to the Pope. Okay, the Pope doesn't have children anyways, but still you can be close to the Pope. Some Popes did have children. Anyway, we don't go into that. So, whatever it be, we will have to understand that there is a pull which makes us feel that what we can enjoy in this world can be enjoyed without thinking about God and His mercy. We all have families, children. We have a family life through whose mercy and blessing? His. So when we enjoy of our children, when God says in the Quran, your children, your wife, your possessions are a trial for you, a tribulation for you. At a point it says, aduwwun lakum, they are an enemy to you. The Quran says it. Why does it say that? It says when you look at them independently of me, they become an enemy to you. That is, you is your soul. And when you look at them along with me, then they become a source of accepting God's mercy and thanking Him. That is the point where the Prophet says, Rabbana la takilna ila anfusina tarfata aynin abada. Oh Lord, don't leave us to our own selves for the time of a blinking of an eyelid. Abada, anytime. Never, never leave us alone on our souls, on the state of our nafs, without you being there. And therefore, when he says, Nahnu akrabu ilayhi min hablil wareed, it shows his love for us. We are close to him more than his own jugular vein. It shows his love for us. Therefore, the Quran starts with Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Things all start with his rahmat. Things all start with his rahmaniyat.
Thank you. I think the last question we'll have today is from Irshad. Sorry to keep you waiting, Irshad. If you could please ask your question.
No problem. It's not quite a question. It's only a comment on what you mentioned in your lecture. You compared the bodily health and also spiritual health, and you were promoting more of a spiritual health on this platform, whereas in the actual world, you also promote physical health. Is that right? So that is important. We have got importance of looking after our body,
yeah,
as well as spiritual health.
Yeah.
So, but you did say, oh, body is not very important. Is the spiritual? Yes. For the final stage is the spirit that will go back, or the soul will go back to Almighty. But the here in this world, we need to look after the physical side, the body, to achieve what we want for our soul. I can't say I don't want the vaccine because it's not important. It's my soul that is important. That would be wrong. Anyway, that's my comment.
I think what you're saying is very correct. Bhai, the question only is this. Once that realization of the soul comes and the soul feels that the body is the instrument for being used for raising itself to that level which God expects of it. It is like somebody who has a car and knows that he has to travel and there is limited time he is going to have, right? So if the car is maintained in the best form, he would be able to use it, and considering that he has only one car and he has to travel every day, now what will he do with it? He will maintain it in the best possible way. See to it that it doesn't create problems where it really needs to serve him. So the body becomes being subservient to the Ruh makes it work in a manner that is optimal. And that is what should be coming naturally as a result of the Ruh becoming powerful. If we speak of the exploits of Maula Muttaqiyan, apart from that spiritual strength which he had, he speaks of bodily strength as well. If bodily strength is taken for a zero, that means we are already dead. Because that means that you don't have a body then. And as long as you are alive, you are supposed to take care of it. And the soul knows how to take care of it. The problem occurs where we think that we are only the body, where the what is good for the body could be a lot of things. It could be a lot of things. Overeating, as I told in the Quran, that those who are kafir eat like as if they are cattle. وَالنَّارُ مَسْوَى لَهُمْ. And Jahannam is their destination. So the body part of it. Again, there are hadith from prophets as well as more from Prophet Moses. He says, God curses a fat rabbi, an obese rabbi. That's what he says. That means those who are the people who are examples of faith should not be obese. They shouldn't overeat. Overeating is considered in the world of Irfan as the disease of the soul, not of the body. Overeating is considered. Quran also says, Allazina kafaru yakuluna kama taakulul anam. Those who are kafirin eat like that. So the question is how much to eat, how much not to eat. The soul is the best determinant, not the test which we do. That we do because just we want to save our body and make it last longer for the sake of the body. Opposite of it. Let the body be in the best shape for the sake of the soul, for the sake of God, Hurbatan Ilallah. One more small question which you all gave me a message on WhatsApp. Shaitan or Iblis are basically things which are not seen by us. They are not in human form. They are not in the form of other animals. Iblis are things which the Quran says they can see you but you can't see them. And the very fact that the jinn are at times referred in the form of microbes as well, which I spoke of in the last lecture, there is no doubt that this force which is positive in the form of microbes which we live by, those which are there in our gut, maybe somebody say 1 trillion as I said earlier and 3 trillions also, that help us to live. Otherwise without them, without the flora, we won't survive. The question is there are others which are capable of creating illusion in us, and that illusion which I mentioned last time are the ones which are not seen by us. But the illusions which keep coming unto us are the result of the physical push of the Iblis, the Shayateen. And there can be Shayateen minal jinne wal ins, and human beings can also become Shaitan, where people who create illusions among us as well, which are false illusions, and even including those who create false illusion in religion, all are part of the Shayateen. That's what is there. But the jinn in the form of Iblis is not visible to us. It acts at the level of the what we will call microscopic level.
Thank you very much, Mujahid. I think we've already exceeded our time. Jazakallah, and we pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala enhances your knowledge and keeps you healthy, and inshallah we get to share more of your knowledge from all of to all of us. So inshallah everybody stay safe, and we'll join again for another interesting talk from Mujahid in a couple of weeks' time, inshallah. Thank you very much.
Thank you again.
Shukriya.
Thank you. Thank you again.
Waalaikumsalam.